I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Today we are previewing the first game of the second half of the Kansas football season against the Texas Longhorns. The Jayhawks are traveling down to Austin. To help me preview that game, I have returning to the podcast Gerald Goodridge from Burn Orange Nation. Gerald, how you doing tonight?
Man, I am good. It's trying to get cold in the Midwest. I'm in Oklahoma City right now, so I like that. It finally feels like fall.
Yeah, you know, I'm out here in Virginia, and we finally, this is the first week that it's gotten below 70 during the day, so it's absolutely been fantastic. This is my favorite time of the year, fall into winter. You know, when it gets ice cold and there's lots of snow and everything, I'm not necessarily as fond of that, although I don't necessarily mind it, but this is like perfect weather. You can still go outside and do something, you know, wear some longer clothes if you get a little cold, but in general, it's just perfect weather to be out and about, so.
Oh yeah, hoodie and basketball shorts is my favorite time of year. But I'm kind of basic, so that is what it is.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being basic when it comes to having comfy clothes. So
yes.
All right, so let's go ahead and take a look at this particular game. Obviously, Texas lost their second game of the season when they faced Oklahoma last week. You know, I don't think that game quite went the way that a lot of people were actually expecting. It seemed like Oklahoma was having some issues for a while. You know, the offenses for either team didn't really get off to a very good start at all. What was the main takeaway that you took from that game, and especially how it relates to Texas for the rest of the season?
I think the biggest takeaway is that OU showed what to do against Texas's offensive line, because Oklahoma State and West Virginia didn't really have anything dialed up, and the Texas O-line looked really, really good. And Alex Grinch came out and ran a lot of downhill blitzing, ran a lot of overloading of the middle, like the A-gaps, blitzed the middle linebacker quite a bit, did a lot of twisting stunts to get people in that A-gap. Zach Shackelford, a guy who I would have 2 weeks ago told you probably one of the top three centers in most of the conference, if not the country, looked like he was completely on skates, just kind of outclassed. And so I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is that the Texas offense goes the way of the offensive line in a very big way. And I wasn't very impressed with that unit against Oklahoma. And that's not something I anticipated saying, that the OU defense was way more physical than the Texas offensive line, because that hasn't been the case for the better part of a decade, right? Like, so that was shocking to me. And then I think Tom Herman said in his Monday press conference that because of the injuries on defense, they haven't done very many form tackling or tackling fundamental drills. And after watching Saturday's game, that's the least shocking revelation of my life. They set records for broken tackles. I think the final tally was like 27 or 28 missed tackles on defense. You've got, you know, safeties out there that are trying to tackle with one arm because they've got shoulder injuries, and you've got guys who are defensive backs that converted to receiver for a year and then back to defensive back. So there's a lot happening, and I think if Texas doesn't figure out how to play more physical on both sides of the ball, I think the next six games are going to be really tough for them.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think, kind of the big story for Texas this year. They've had a lot of problems. I don't think they've been playing nearly as well as a lot of people expected them to, but you can almost attribute almost every single one of those issues to the fact that they are just so thin right now. They've had so many injuries to so many key positions. I mean, you know, they converted a quarterback back over to a running back, and he's now lighting the world on fire, it seems, almost from that running back position, at least by Texas standards. So, you know, yeah. I guess my biggest question related to that is, where do you think the depth is the biggest issue right now? Like the one that you're worried about moving forward, even against a team like Kansas.
It's gotta be the secondary. They were banged up going into that game. Caden Stearns still out. Texas lost. It's the only guy really heading into game one that had solidified his place as a starting cornerback, broke his foot 2 games into the season. So he's out. Again, I mentioned Caden Stearns has been battling a knee injury. Jalen Green is still out with a shoulder injury. It just keeps getting thinner. Chris Brown, who was a guy who was playing really well at safety, one of the better tackling safeties on the team, is out for 6 weeks probably for this season after he fractured his forearm. And so, like, the secondary just keeps getting banged up and keeps getting hurt. And it's one of those years that you see every 10 years where it just feels like the injury bug is just not going to leave you alone. And it sucks that it's a year that this defense had a lot of potential, but needed to get some experience under its belt, that some of these young guys are now missing significant chunks of, if not the entire season, that they're not getting those snaps. And so that is, that's probably the biggest area of concern for me. I'm not super concerned about running back. The injuries have kind of cleared themselves up there. Keontae Ingram is still listed as the starter. Roshan Johnson is probably the starter in everyone's hearts. At number two, he's the team's leading rusher. He's actually number four in the conference in yards per carry. He's got like five. He's averaging basically like 5.5 a carry. So he's been playing really, really well. And those guys that were banged up at running back are back. They're probably not going to see much of the field, though.
Yeah, I'm going to be completely honest. You know, I think we had kind of done a preview over the summer, and I had I thought a decent idea of, you know, where people were on the roster and who the big playmakers were going to be. But with all the injuries, like, I don't know that I can really name more than, you know, Sam Ellinger at quarterback. And without actually pulling a roster up and looking at the depth chart, like, I'm not really sure that most people would even recognize who is who. So going into this game, who are the big players, the big playmakers that we need to kind of keep an eye out for, especially on the offense?
So Devin Duvernay has been the guy. He kind of, LJ Humphrey was kind of a revelation for a lot of people last year at the slot position, but it's not really hard to see that trend happening, because 2 years ago, you got a guy that nobody remembers, Reggie Hempel Maps, who ended up transferring out, weirdly enough, at that slot position and had a blow up year. So whoever starts the year at that slot position in the Texas offense is going to be the star of the show. Duvernay is a little bit smaller than LJ Humphrey, but quicker than he is. Colin Johnson, if he's cleared from a head injury, he was not diagnosed with a concussion, but he very clearly got his bell rung on an uncalled targeting call. I'm still pretty salty about that. He's back. He kind of announced his re-arrival against OU. He really shows out against OU, had some pretty highlight reel catches, only finished with 85 yards because he went out halfway through the third quarter with that head injury that, again, I'm still kind of pissed about. So he's the guy. And then obviously we talked about Roshan Johnson. Roshan, this is like, it always comes off as a backhanded compliment, but at running back, Roshan Johnson is a guy who 3 months ago was not playing the wide receiver position or the running back position. He was a third string quarterback. And I think because of his inexperience at the position, he doesn't overthink things, where you see some guys get inside their own head and try to make plays. He just, oh, there's a crease, I'm going to run at it as hard as I can and see what happens from there. And we saw that against OU, where he cracked off a 57-yard run by just taking the first seam and hitting it as hard as he could. So I think those are the three guys, outside of obviously Sam Ellinger, who really make the offense go. You've obviously got a guy like Jake Smith, who's a true freshman. He was the Arizona Gatorade National Player of the Year, was up for the National Player of the Year, but lost out by a close margin. Brendan Eagles is a guy who's another big body receiver who's inconsistent. I will say he has more explosive plays this year than Texas as a team had all year last year, but every catch with him is an adventure, because even on all of those big catches, he almost dropped every single one of them. So it's an adventure, but when he does get his hands on the ball, he's a guy who can kind of blow it up for them.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of turning our attention a little bit to Sam Ehlinger, because the impression that I've gotten this year so far is that Ehlinger really hasn't been as impressive as I expected him to be, you know, and I'm wondering how much of that is less about what he's actually done. Cause I'm looking here and it actually, he's third in the Big 12 in passing yards. He's got 17 passing touchdowns, only two interceptions. You know, he's been extremely efficient this year. How much of it is just that there's other storylines surrounding Texas, or is Sam Ehlinger just not as impressive this year as people expected him to be going into the year?
It honestly, I feel like it's more that there are just quarterbacks that are more impressive, and he's played against two of them this year in Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts. Sam Ehlinger, through five games, had the best start in school history, like better than Colt McCoy in the year where he broke all of the school passing records that will probably never be broken. He had a better start than him. His last two games were kind of a struggle, because West Virginia did some interesting things schematically against him. He had one of his career lows completion percentages. I think it's like the second or third lowest completion percentage of his career against West Virginia. And then he was held without a passing touchdown against Oklahoma. But I mean, it's hard to say it's been a down year for him, because he's, again, had games where he's thrown 400 yards and four touchdowns, and he's you know, thrown for 300 yards and four touchdowns and rushed for a couple. And I think he got this reputation over the offseason that he's more of a battering ram runner, a Tim Tebow, and even some people called him a poor man's Tim Tebow. And then he came out and kind of flipped the script on everybody. And a lot of the story around him last year was focused on his tough-nosed running, and that's what made most of the highlight reels. And he's not doing that this year. And so there's not a ton of highlight reel plays from Sam Ehlinger, because he's been focusing on his performance as a passer, which has paid dividends in a lot of ways for the offense. But again, we saw against Oklahoma that the coaches went back to the well too much, and he had 23 carries. And so I think it's a weird mix of things where he's not putting out there what people expected to see from him. And there are a ton of other storylines around Texas. And this is just a really big year for quarterbacks. I mean, I mentioned two guys that are going to be in New York, but there's conversations around what's happening at the quarterback spot with, at Ohio State. You got conversations about these still. I haven't mentioned Tua Tagovailoa yet. So like, they're just quarterbacks that are above and beyond what Sam Ehlinger is doing, which is off to one of the best starts in school history.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, and it kind of sounds like it's lining up with what you're thinking, is that everybody expected him to be a Heisman candidate coming into the year. And while he's been very good, and in most years, he probably would be, you know, a guy that would be under consideration. There are just guys that are completely lighting it up. Like to a degree that I don't think we've ever seen before. And right, it doesn't help that he got outshined by Joe Burrow when they played LSU, and he got outshined by Jalen Hurts. And of course, Jalen Hurts is honestly, you know, being hailed as probably one of the most efficient guys in the entire nation at this point. He also, I think, gets a little bit of that extra mystique from having been a transfer from Alabama. So he's, you know, been at two top programs and has been a really good quarterback at both of them.
And everybody wanted to give him the Heisman just from day one for the storyline of three straight Heisman winners transferred into OU, right? Like, everybody wanted him to be the Heisman front runner. And so he's playing really well. Like, don't hear me like talking down about how well he's playing, because the guy's playing really, really well. Right. But like, I would put Joe Burrow over him. Having watched them both torch the Texas defense, what Joe Burrow is doing at LSU is scary, and it's also proving the thing that I've said for a very long time, that the SEC defenses aren't that good. The offenses have just been crap for the last 15 years.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny, because I saw an article, I don't remember who it was that published it today, but in my Twitter feed there was an article that came across that basically said that Big 12 defenses are better than SEC defenses. And, you know, there's a lot of course, as you would expect, a bunch of Big 12 people piling on and saying, yeah, we've been talking about that for a while. And of course, all the SEC people that are laughing at the premise. But I mean, if you look at a lot of the advanced analytics and everything, you know, and all those advanced stats, like it holds up that the Big 12 has a good crop of defenses this year so far. I do actually want to go ahead and talk about the defenses here. But before we do that, I do need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back. All right, so we just spent a bunch of time talking about Texas offense. I want to move over to the defense now, kind of talking about this Texas defense specifically. You know, I think the big story for the Texas defense, aside from the injuries that we've already kind of talked about a little bit, is the fact that Malcolm Roach is going to be suspended for the – or he's going to miss the first half of this game from a targeting penalty against Oklahoma. I didn't actually see the penalty. So, I mean, was it one of those where it was an obvious target penalty and this is kind of justified that he needs to be sitting out? Or is it another one of those kind of iffy calls that you don't really think it should have been targeting?
I can argue it both ways. So it was a targeting call on a wide receiver who had so it was CeeDee Lamb who torched the defense. And Lamb had just cut completely across the field and then slid to like avoid contact. Okay. And so no, like okay. who expects a wide receiver to slide?
Like, right. Yeah. I did see those highlights.
What are you doing?
No. Yeah. That was really weird. Like normally the only people you see slide are the quarterbacks. So yeah, no, I can understand he was going low for the tackle. I do remember actually seeing the highlight now. He was going low for the tackle and the guy slid and there was like nothing he could have done to pull up at that point. It's been a really weird year for penalties like that. In a lot of different places, not just in the Big 12. So, unfortunately, I think it's just kind of one of those, unfortunate things. So, like by the letter of the law, it would be targeting because it was helmet to helmet contact. Yep. But if you look, like there was no intent of spearing the guy with your helmet or leading with the helmet or anything. Like he was going for a good form tackle, and the guy just happened to slide so that his helmet got in the way of the other guy's helmet. So it is unfortunate. The question becomes, how much of a hole does that open up in this Texas defense? Do you have a guy that can kind of, man the fort for a half and kind of slow down what Kansas is trying to do? Or is that a real worry for this first half?
Well, it's always tough when you lose, like he's a captain, right? So there's that as well. So it's always tough when you lose a captain on that side. And it's going to be a problem because that Texas edge has not been as great as I think it could be in some spots. Marquez Bimage is the guy who's behind him on the depth chart who will likely get the start, but I think you'll also see a young guy, Tavondre Sweat. I always say his name wrong, so I'm just going to call him T-Sweat moving forward. So T-Sweat will get quite a bit of rotation there as well. I also think you could potentially see a guy like Joseph Osai play a little bit closer to the line, as well as Dele Ayoade. I always say his name wrong. There are a lot of weird names in the Texas defense right now.
I'm glad you're saying them and not me.
Yeah. Ayodele Adeoye. I always say it wrong. And then his backup is David Benda with a G. So like there are these weird, a lot of weird names. They're incredible football players though. Anywho, so you'll see a lot of Marquez Bimage. I think you'll see Tavondre Sweat in the rotation as well. Taquan Graham, who's on the other side of Roach, has played really well. So I think they can leave him and just have him hold that down for a half. And then when Roach is back, you get back to your four-man rotation that they've really been playing well. In the middle, Keandre Coburn and Mora Ojomo are two really polar opposite players at nose tackle. And so I think you may see them – shade a little bit closer to that right side, just to kind of, because what Coburn is 6'5 and 325, 330 pounds. So he's just a huge guy, just a massive man. While Ojomo's kind of more of a converted D end. So a little bit smaller, a little bit quicker. So I think you'll see them do some interesting things with the front to help alleviate some of the pressure, because Puka Williams is coming, and regardless of what he's producing this year, that guy is a touchdown waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and he's kind of been hamstrung a little bit this year, just in that, you know, I think there's been some issues in terms of play calling. You know, there's been a lot of not utilizing Puka in a way that is actually playing to his strengths. And we've talked about that quite a bit. Here on this particular podcast, but you know, it seems like that's going to be completely different now that Brent Dierman is there as the offensive coordinator. Kansas in the first, you know, with the exception of the Boston College game, had been running a lot of like power running style of game, running guys like Puka even like up the middle through blockers, trying to find holes in the line and get his yards that
definitely
way.
Definitely his game.
Puka's more of a, you know, wide open space, make a guy miss, have a nice big cut, you know, or like jet sweeps around the end and, you know, getting out in space. He's not the kind of runner that you need for what they were trying to do at the beginning of the year. And so I think the fact that they have a change in offensive philosophy, they're still not quite exactly sure what he's going to do there, like what's going to happen with this new offense and how quickly they're going to pick everything up. But it can't get much worse in terms of the way that you're using Puka. And so I am expecting him to get better. The question is going to be how much better and how quick is it going to happen? Talking about the actual change here, like how much of, you know, what Texas's game plan for this game would have been, you know, assuming there was no offensive coordinator change, has to go out the window at this point. Like, do you think it changes that much of what Texas will try to do? Or is Texas going to try to essentially just line up and, you know, out physical and try to use their talent disparity to try to win this game?
I honestly don't know what the scheme is going to look like, because they got so thoroughly out schemed by the OU offensive staff. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said that they'll probably play pretty physical at the point of attack, bring their corners closer to the line, especially the guys at nickel. Brandon Jones, who's made his name as a safety, has been playing a lot more nickel back this year. Play him pretty close to the line and really try to force Kansas to beat you passing would be what I would have said 2 weeks ago. But again, I think, at least from my vantage point, everything that Texas had been doing to this point has been invalidated by the fact that they just got so thoroughly outcoached and outmanned against Oklahoma. So I still think you'll see them try to play pretty strong at the line of scrimmage and point of attack, because that's just one of the things that this defensive coaching staff and Todd Orlando really likes to do. So I think you'll see them try to clog up the middle. Keandre Coburn, when he's playing really well, usually occupies two blockers. So that gives you a numbers advantage right there, because you'll, again, play your corners pretty close to the line and force them to kind of try to beat you through the air.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see the chess match that's going to happen here, because I think Texas is not going to be prepared in terms of, like, you know, being able to plan for the Kansas offensive scheme. So how well they're going to be able to adjust
the film
in the first half will go a long ways to telling us whether, you know, is this a 14-7 game at the, you know, at the half, or has Texas kind of solved it and they're up, you know, 28-0. That's going to be a big thing. And then coming out of halftime, how well is Kansas going to be able to adjust to Malcolm Roach coming back, you know, and how well is Texas going to be able to use that to try to change what they're doing with Kansas, to see if they can disrupt whatever momentum the Jayhawks may be able to get.
I've been overly critical of the coaching staff this week, and I think most Texas fans wouldn't blame me for it. But I think one of the things you'll probably see from Orlando is not a ton of adjustments in the first half, but he's been really good at making halftime adjustments. It's one thing that I can't really be super upset at him about. So I think you'll probably see a closer game, I think, with more points from Kansas than most of us are expecting in the first half, and then him try to kind of figure out and make some adjustments at halftime.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how successful that's going to be, because, you know, what I'm expecting and what Kansas has shown in the one game that has essentially been under, you know, under the regime that we're expecting we're going to get offensively, Kansas was really good in the first half and then made their own really good adjustments to what Boston College was trying to do to shut them down. Now, obviously, Boston College is nowhere near as talented. They don't have the same talent level that Texas does. But the question, you know, if we're talking about out-coaching a guy and trying to come up with schemes to kind of take advantage of the weaknesses of the opposing team, just based off of everything that I've seen, it seems like Brent Dearman knows how to do that. He just may not have the experience at this kind of league to be able to do that. But, you know, everywhere he's been able to pick it up real quick. Obviously, they don't have the benefit of him going, you know, having a full offseason before he's trying to implement a system. But I think that's what makes this game so fascinating. It's just we don't know what we're going to get from Kansas at this point, offensively or defensively. Kansas is not going to have their star defender in Drew Prox. So that's going to help Texas offensively. But, you know, we saw Kansas play Oklahoma really close in that first half. That kind of surprised a few people. You know, I can't say that Texas' offense is more efficient than Oklahoma's. So if Kansas can stop Texas or Oklahoma for a half, I have to think that there's at least the possibility that they could stop Texas for a half. And if the offense can get going, I mean, I don't know. How do you think a team like Texas would handle being down, you know, 14-7 or even like, you know, 21-7 going into the half at home against a team in Kansas that everyone expected to kind of roll over a lot of times this year?
I think one thing you can't say about this Texas team that you probably would say about previous years is that they don't know how to deal with adversity. I think you saw it against LSU where they played probably the worst first half of football I've seen since Charlie Strong left, and they bounced back and were able to turn it into a game that they had a legitimate shot. Colin Johnson, if his elbow comes down 4 inches to the right, then Texas recovers an onside and goes down and scores to win the game. So I think that you saw that again against OU where they continue to battle back. And so this is a team that has a lot more mental fortitude than we've seen from Texas teams in the past, which is a good thing because this could turn out to really be a dogfight. And I, again, 2 years ago, I think the Texas is not mentally equipped to do that. But I think with the leaders that they have, with the guys that are really bought into the culture, bought into the vision that Tom Herman is trying to get them to buy into, I think they can deal with adversity better than we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, to have the record that they have after dealing with all these injuries, I have to think that they're going to be good at handling the adversity and overcoming it eventually. The question is going to be, you know, I don't know, especially after this last game against Oklahoma. Well, even in that particular game, like there hasn't been a game yet where Texas has really been punched in the mouth early and had to recover from it. It's usually just that they, you know, both teams have started slow or both teams have started fast and it's kind of been back and forth. I mean, has Texas even been down by more than a single touchdown other than, you know, when Oklahoma was able to kind of get a lead at that point? Oh, I guess the end of the LSU game, right? They were down, but like, they haven't gotten into an instance yet where they've been down by more than 7 points for, you know, any significant length of time before last week, right?
I'd have to go back and look at the box score, but that first half against LSU was they were down double digits. They're down 13-7, 20-7 against LSU at the end of the first half. So they were down 13 to LSU coming out of halftime and then battled back there. So that's probably the one time where this year that Texas has been in against probably the best team they've played all year. I've argued in specific forums that probably LSU and Ohio State have been the most impressive three teams this year, and I can't put them in any order, but LSU is probably one of the best teams in the country.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I mean, even in that, I was pretty sure. And again, I might be misremembering it, but I was pretty sure LSU scored late in the first half there, and then Texas scored pretty quickly going into the second half. So like, it never got to a point where they were, you know, down big for an extended period of time. You know, until Oklahoma went up, you know, 10 a couple different times. But Texas always seemed to kind of fight back to at least like stay in the game. I don't think anyone ever expects, even if Kansas were to somehow get out to a big lead early because they just jump on, you know, something that Texas wasn't ready for, I don't think there's any expectation there that Texas won't be able to come back. And so, like, I don't think that's that sort of instance, but I also don't think that we've we've really gotten to a situation yet where Texas has dealt with something that they weren't kind of expecting. Like, I think everybody expected that LSU had a really good offense, could potentially get up against Texas, you know, and they might have to battle back. But like, that was an expectation. You knew that one was going to be a dogfight there. Same with Oklahoma. Like, you expected that Oklahoma's offense could potentially get out to a decent sized lead, but you felt that your defense could potentially get a couple stops here and the offense could fight back. I mean, again, I don't know how likely it is that something like this even happens, but I'm just like, this is the one game that I kind of circled for Kansas. And as a, you know, coming off the bye, Texas is just coming out of a game against Oklahoma. That's probably going to be a pretty big dogfight. You know, could they potentially overlook this Kansas team with TCU next up on the schedule with TCU's vaunted defense that they have? I mean, again, I think that Texas' talent wins out here no matter how bad it gets, you know, unless we're like going into the fourth quarter and Kansas is up by 3 touchdowns or something like that, which, again, I don't know how that would happen. But, you know, like, is there any chance that Texas just doesn't feel the urgency for this type of game that you think that they would necessarily need to go ahead and put Kansas away early?
This would be your classic letdown look ahead, right? Like, that would be right. That they're coming off the emotional high of OU. They've got TCU on the road the week after. But I think, again, people are giving Tom Herman a lot of grief about, you know, alignment over results and whatever. But I think these players have really bought into the 1-0 mentality where you can. They don't even after in the post game, they will immediately move on to, all right, we won that one. Now let's go to, oh, we lost that one. Let's move on and look at Rice. And so I think that to me is a sign of a team that's not really looking too far ahead. Now, again, I'm not in the locker room. They're not on social media, so I can't really see or have any sort of insight into what is actually going on in the players' heads. But I think if you're a guy on this team that's looking ahead, then you haven't been paying attention, because this is a team that's finally good enough to beat overmatched teams without their A game, but they're still not an elite team. And I think the captains on this team, Colin Johnson, you know, Sam Ellinger, Devin Duvernay was just promoted to being a sixth captain for this team. You know, Malcolm Roach, Brandon Jones, those guys, like they are guys that are pretty vocal about getting these younger guys in line. And so this could be a spot where that does happen, but I think there's going to be a lot of pageantry. There's a lot of people that are going to be honoring the 1969 championship team. So it's the kind of the 50th anniversary of that national championship team. And so there's going to be a lot of eyes from alumni to hopefully get them to play like that. So there's going to be a lot of pressure. There's going to be a lot of expectation. So I'm curious to see how they deal with that.
Yeah, it definitely should be interesting. All right, I do want to kind of wrap up with just a few more questions. But before we do that, I do need to throw it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so you know, we've kind of been talking about, you know, what we're kind of expecting to see. So before we get to our actual game predictions, I do want to ask, if Kansas were to somehow pull off an upset here, what would the game have to look like for something like that to happen?
I think the offensive line would have to play just as bad as they did against Oklahoma. And I think I think Puka Williams would probably have a field day against the linebackers who aren't as fast as what we've seen at Texas in the last 3 years under Todd Orlando. So I think those would be the two things where Zach Shackelford and his two guards kind of get super twisted up by some defensive fronts and some stunting. And then Puka Williams takes advantage of some speed differential between him and Texas's front six, front seven guys.
So I'm curious, do you think it would have to be something where, like, everything that could go right for Kansas goes right for Kansas, and they somehow not just win the game, but, like, blow out Texas, like, absolutely humiliate them, that type of, you know, everything going right for Kansas? Or do you think it would be something where, like, they jump out to a quick lead, Malcolm Roach comes back in the second half, and Texas is clawing back and makes it a game, and Kansas is able to just squeak out a win at the end?
I think that's probably going to be the more likely of the scenario. I don't think this is a team that just rolls over when that type of adversity hits. So I really do think that it's going to be, again, probably more like the year that you guys beat Texas.
So 2016?
2016. Yeah, 2016. It would be like a weird, like, Kansas plays really, really well. Texas plays really, really poorly. And it's like a last second situation.
You know, it would be absolutely poetic justice for Carter Stanley to beat Texas at home his freshman year, his first year actually playing, and then beat Texas on the road for his senior year, you know, with a brand new offensive system and kind of ushering in what we thought the last win against Texas would be in terms of, you know, ushering in a turnaround for the Jayhawks. Now, granted, I don't expect any of that to happen, but I do want to go ahead and get your thoughts on the actual prediction you have for this game.
I think that, and this is my legitimate thought, I think Sam Ellinger is going to come and play real pissed off, and I'll try to keep it as family friendly. He's played poorly these last two games. He hasn't played up to his own personal standard. He's one of those guys that's hypercritical of himself in a way where it motivates him rather than gets inside his own head. And so I think Sam Ellinger is going to come out and try to prove that he's more of the quarterback you saw in the first 4 weeks than you did in the last two. And so I think he's going to come out and try to make a statement. And I really do think that the Texas offense is going to do a good job of establishing the run. So I really do think the Texas offense plays really well. Now, the defense, I have no earthly clue what that unit is going to do. And so I think it could potentially be a high-scoring game, but I do think Texas comes out with probably a comfortable two-score win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking somewhat along the same lines, at least in terms of, you know, like, I don't expect Ellinger to have real big problems with this game. The one thing that I will say is that, you know, the Kansas defense has definitely improved in the last couple of weeks, or like that specifically that game against Oklahoma. They really surprised me. And so I think there's at least a possibility that, you know, there will be a few drives early where it'll take Ellinger and it'll take Texas a little bit of time to figure out the best way to attack the defense. Kansas can throw some weird looks, and they do have probably one of the better secondaries in the Big 12. You know, they had the two best returning players in Mike Lee and Bryce Tornaden back at safety. You know, they had Hassan Defense, Corion Harris. Like, they had a fairly good and fairly high-rated secondary, which I think is going to help them. You know, Ellinger's probably going to have to do most of his damage for a good portion of the day on, you know, underneath crossing routes, which may limit some of the big plays that they're able to get. And so it may be a little bit more work than I think Texas is – potentially accustomed to or thinking that they're going to have, and most people would think. What's really going to hurt the Jayhawks, I think, is the fact that they won't have Drew Prox back. You know, running defense is going to be a little bit of an issue. They have some guys in Azur Kamara and Najee Stevens-McKenzie who could potentially slow down the running game, but I think that's where Texas is going to do most of their damage, honestly. You know, it's going to be using the running game to hopefully open up some stuff in the passing game for Ellinger to finally be able to hit some deep shots. On the flip side, you know, Kansas has already shown that they can handle the RPO when, you know, Les Miles has already, you know, essentially admitted that the Boston College game was a heavy RPO run, the game plan, you know, that Brent Dierman helped put together. You know, there was a lot of talk about and the Miles to Go series that talks about Les Miles and kind of shows the behind the scenes for the football team there in the footage for that Boston College game. You know, they were talking about, I'm going to give him one more play. A lot of people have thought that was Carter Stanley, you know, might have gotten yanked. What seems more likely at this point now is that they were giving the new RPO packages that had been set up one more shot to try to see if they could get it going. At least that's the reading that I'm getting now based off of all the other context that's going on. And the fact that it worked so well there, even when they didn't have like an RPO guy actually running it and actually calling the plays, makes me wonder what they're going to be able to do. The fact that Texas's secondary is so beat up and is having so many problems really helps a guy like Carter Stanley implement that type of system. You know, Kansas actually has two extremely good wide receiver threats in Andrew Parchman and Daylon Charlotte. They've already had huge games at various times throughout the year. They have a few other guys like Stephon Robinson who can pick up the slack and can kind of help expand the abilities of the passing game. And so what I'm wondering is how quickly Kansas is going to get the passing game going, which is going to open up even more for Puka Williams. Kansas should be able to stick with Texas at some point in this game. Ultimately, when Malcolm Roach gets back, I wonder how much that is going to kind of shut down some of what Kansas wants to do. But I do agree with you. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game to the surprise of a lot of people. I think, unfairly, there's going to be a lot of people that are wondering what's going on with the Texas defense. But they are just going to be, I think, the unfortunate victims of a brand-new offensive scheme that there's absolutely no tape on. Wrinkles from a new offensive coordinator that they just couldn't have planned for. And the fact that they're still dealing with so many injuries, they're probably going to look a little worse than most people or than they actually are. But I do think that Texas will ultimately pull it out late. I think it could be a fairly close game for a majority of the game. I wouldn't be surprised if Texas won this game on a last second field goal. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they won by two scores and Kansas was able to get a close one to get it back to a 7-point game. I do think Kansas covers the spread, though. I think the spread is way too big for this type of game. Knowing that, now that I've said that, you know, Texas is going to go and blow them out by like 38 or something like that.
I would love a stress-free Saturday. It's been stressful for the last two. So I'd really would like to just be able to relax and not be tense as I try to put my son to sleep at halftime.
Well, I hope you don't get that. Not because I don't want you to be able to put your son to sleep very well, but mainly because I want to see Kansas get some success here as early as possible. So, all right, I do like to end on one kind of final off-the-wall question. What I have for you this week, you know, leading up to last week's game, there was the random Oklahoma guy that decided to start the quote-unquote horns up for peace movement, which went absolutely nowhere. It was absolutely ridiculous and corny, I thought. So for you, if you could pick one tradition that either a rival or, you know, someone that they play every once in a while, or just really anyone you could think of, a tradition of an opposing team that you could essentially try to hijack and turn into something like that, what would you pick and how would you do it?
Oh, man. I was very unprepared for this. My mind immediately goes to something.
Go ahead.
I immediately go to something around couch burning because West Virginia is just so fun to make fun of with that. I also think the Texas Tech tortilla toss is a thing that I would like to see co-opted by Texas. I can imagine what that many tortillas flying onto the field would look like. It would basically delay a game for probably a solid half hour, which depending on how the start of the game went could be a positive for Texas. So maybe the tortilla toss.
That would actually be a lot of fun. Does Texas Tech come to visit Austin this year, or do you guys travel to Lubbock?
That's a great question. If I was better at my job, I could tell you. Off the top of my head, Tech is in Austin this year.
That would be absolutely hilarious if, you know, and it's the last game of the season, isn't it? So last game of the season, Texas Tech comes out and tortillas rain down on their heads as they're coming out of the tunnel. I think that would be absolutely hilarious.
I think it'd be great.
All right. Well, we will go ahead and leave it there. Gerald, where can the people find you online?
You can follow me on Twitter at the Longhorn Republic Podcast, which is the Burn Nation podcast. So you can follow us on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. That's really where you can find most of me. And then obviously on Burnt Orange Nation, I do some statistical analysis every Sunday of the game that came before.
Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It was real great. Good luck on Saturday, especially trying to get your son down to sleep, but hopefully not too much luck. I would like to see an entertaining game.
You and me both. Have a good one, brother.
All right. So thank you guys so much for joining us. If you haven't already, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of that great stuff. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk and you can subscribe, give us a rating, comments, review, all that fun stuff. If you can, you know, 5 stars, nice comments would be great. If not, let us know what it is that we could be doing better. We really do want to make this podcast as great as we can for you guys so that you guys are hearing what it is that you want to hear. If you want to give us comments, suggestions, questions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact us by email, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Twitter @rockchalkpod. We are always open to your guys' comments and suggestions, but we will go ahead and leave it there. Once again, Gerald, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.